Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to PhillyFanatics.com's Blog Talk Radio Show, Philly Sports Talk. I am Eric Fisher, and Gordon Glantz on assignment today at another sporting event. We will not be calling in Josh Landsberg. We'll see if Josh checks in. If not, it's just you and I, so you can get through right away. Call in. I'll put you on the air. And we do have a lot to talk about. And I've got Phillies, Eagles, Sixers, Flyers. It's all happening this week. Lots of good stuff. NBA and NHL playoffs. If you're into NASCAR, Dover was today. Matt Kenseth getting his first win of the season, almost assuring him a spot in the chase. But let's start with the Philadelphia Phillies. And they took it on the chin today, 9-4. But that does not diminish the really terrific run they've been having. They won three in a row before this game. This game 9-4 to the Reds. Adam Morgan getting lit up. Eight hits, seven runs. Five of those runs coming in the fourth inning. Made it through 3 2/3. But that's not 3 2/3. Not a good day, but that doesn't detract from what the Phillies have been doing. And I believe Josh is not here, but I believe we have Ron Ofer on the air. Ron, is that you?
It is.
Welcome back, Ron.
Don't keel over.
it's like old time week.
I guess so.
It's like, yeah. So, Ron, I was starting off with the Phillies, and
that's a good thing because I actually was at the game Friday night, and I really have been a little bit out of the loop with Philly sports, so I can probably speak intelligently on the current state of the Phillies.
There we go. Certainly this team has a surprising 22-16 record, surprising just about everybody. And so I wrote on PhillyFanatics.com, I did a Phillies notebook this week talking about the reasons for their success, but rather than rehash what I have to say, Ron, what do you attribute their, success to so far this season?
Well, clearly the pitching particularly, I mean, they're really leaning on the three young pitchers in the rotation. And, well, not really including Adam Morgan, but Morgan's decent. But, I mean, the future of this team or the near-term future has to do with Eichhoff, Velasquez, and Nola. And then throw in Neris and Gomez at the back end of the bullpen, and five guys are carrying the team on the mound. So, you know, Hellickson did a nice job Friday night, certainly, and it just seems to be contagious. This team's not going to score a ton of runs, but they hang in the close games. They seem to be winning more than their fair share of close games. And, you know, a cautionary tale is I just don't think that they've really played a lot of tough teams yet. I mean, certainly they played the Nats and the Mets within the division, but I'm really questioning whether the National League East is a particularly strong division. They've not played the Pirates, Cubs, Cardinals, Dodgers, or Giants. So, you know, we'll see where this team is when they start playing some of the cream of the crop in the league. But it's certainly a welcome sign to see that, and there's a lot of enthusiasm around this team too.
Yeah, that's really nice to. I was going to say some of that for my final thought, but I mean, my God, they're actually relevant. I mean, they're not drawing a ton of people to the ballpark yet, but they're competitive. They're relevant. Ron, you're a stats guy more than I am in terms of evaluating teams and, you know, things like points differential and, you know, whether the team's overachieving. You look at the Phillies; they have the And these stats, I guess, are a day old. They're from before yesterday's game, but they're third and second to last in hitting, third to last in runs. Is it just how are they doing that with such little production? I mean, I know you hit the pitching. What else are they doing to maximize their production when they're really not hitting the ball very well at all?
I can't really answer that. I mean, I don't think they are scoring very many runs. I don't think we can expect them to score very many runs. But one example for Friday night is their defense has generally been pretty good, but Tyler Goodell got a start, dropped the ball that he should have had. It was a long run, but, you know, the two-run error. And those are the only two runs the Reds scored. They're basically the only runs were on there that night. But then Goodell laces the ball just inside the foul line. I believe it was his next at-bat. And knocks into and makes up for it. So maybe one can a small sample that, you know, when a guy messes up, either he has a chance to step up late in the game or his teammates will pick him up. That's what I mean. It just seemed like there's a lot of enthusiasm in the dugout. And just seems to be a little contagious. They're happy winning games. They're pulling for each other. They're supporting each other. They're not the most talented team in the world, certainly, but, you know, flip side of the coin is the Braves, I felt, were a worse team. The Brewers, the Reds, Rockies, Padres, arguably all worse teams than the Phillies. And the Marlins is probably a push. So it's not like they're a bad team by the standards of a lot of the other, you know, the guys, the teams that were expected to be all-star-ans this year. I still don't think they hold a candle to some of the teams that I mentioned who I think will be the playoff teams, but they're a middle-of-the-pack kind of team. I mean, don't expect them to end up, just barely avoiding 100 losses and going to a tailspin. I mean, you know, I think 500 would still be an achievement for them. I don't expect them to have a winning record, but you never know. Let's see how long this keeps up. You know, a lot of people didn't think much of the 93 team, and I don't know how long it took for them to be believers. I don't want to compare this team to that team. A lot more talent on that team, but similar. It kind of came from nowhere, and only a few people really believed in the team at first, and you never know where this can lead. And then there may be some reinforcements in the minors as well. Some of the better prospects haven't even come up to this team yet. So it will be interesting if they keep this up going in July and August. You may see some reinforcements, not through trade, but through promoting from the farm system.
Yeah, well, and they just brought up one guy on Friday, which was Tommy Joseph, who was put on waivers last October, and nobody picked him up. And lo and behold, he's leading the International League in hitting, and with Darren Ruff batting, I believe 158 it was, with no home runs. It was a pretty easy decision, I think, for them to bring up Tommy Joseph. Should get a chance to play, Ron, against the Marlins. They have two left-handed starters in the series coming up. What do you want to see from Tommy Joseph?
I'd like to see the power. You know he's going to strike out. I'd like to see the power. I still wonder whether he's going to be long for this team with Cody Ashley going on a rehab assignment. I don't think Tommy Joseph is going to be around very long. Certainly not if he goes like 1-for-20 or something like that. But even, you know, unless he goes on a tear, quite honestly, I don't think he's going to stick.
Okay. I'm happy. I'm enjoying the ride. I'm a little worried that worry is not the right word. I'm concerned that, you know, with the level of offense that they've had, that, you know, at some point, you know, I mean, Jaymar Gomez, you know, is going to, I mean, it's blown one save so far, but I don't think anybody expected the back of their bullpen to be as good as it was, you know, the start of last year when they had Ken Giles and Jonathan Papelbon. But Hector Neris and Gomez have done this so far really, really well. Neris has something like 30 strikeouts in 23 innings or something along those lines, and Gomez has been terrific. And, you know, I just wonder if is it a case where they're, and maybe you can answer this, Ron, or take a shot at it, you know, is it a case where, you know, they've been playing so well, and, you know, boy, when that offense comes around, they're going to be even better, or is it a case of, boy, they're sliding by with this offense, and, you know, they just can't keep winning? Their last 10 wins, 9 of them are by one run, and the other one was in extra innings, where it was tied at the end of 9, and they won in extra innings. You know, can they, which one do you think it is? Is it a case of, boy, you know, when the offense comes around a little bit, this team's going to be a lot better, or is it a case of, you know, they're getting by with it now, but eventually it's going to catch up to them?
No, I think we're seeing the best of what they have to offer. I don't expect the offense to improve dramatically. I expect that it to even out, that they don't win 90% of their one-run games or whatever, you know, something similar to what you just said, Eric. You know, plus the possibility or likelihood of when they start seeing some tougher teams on the schedule, or another possibility is they simply wear down Neris and Gomez. You know, they're winning that many games, they don't trust anyone else, and they don't have a guy who's going to go 8 or 9 innings on the mound. Invariably, they're going to wear out the 8th and 9th inning guys if they're winning that often. So the recipe is that they just can't keep.
You know, Ron, one more thing I want to ask about the Phillies before we go on. And that is, since you were at the game Friday, and I think this is indicative of you know, what their offense is like now, what they need to do. Didn't Pete Maccanico call for like a safety squeeze in the 4th inning to plate that 3rd run for the 3-2 win? You know,
but it was definitely no later than the 6th. Yeah, and Jeremy, but you know, the safety squeeze was because Jeremy Hellickson was batting. I don't know that they called for that with a middle of the order guy up there, but the point is fair. I mean, after the number five hitter that night, the bottom of the order was garbage. You know, and I'm even giving Freddie Galvis credit. I think he was the five hitter that night. You know, I'm even counting him as a real player. So, I mean, you look at this team, and granted, they have Ryan Howard on the bench. You know, he's a power threat, but he can't even hit 200 anymore. And he doesn't play against lefties. So, I mean, Dean McKinnon's very limited with what he can do. And they're fortunate to push that run across because, you know, the catcher basically could have gotten, I forget who the base runner was, easily could have either gotten him in a rundown or just frozen him to not come home. And the catcher picked up the ball and threw to first inexplicably without even looking the runner back. And as soon as the catcher aimed toward first, the runner took off for home. It was a gift, but the Phillies will take it. I mean, the Reds are an even less fundamentally sound team than the Phillies. There are worse teams in the league than the Phillies.
Yep, it was Goodell who also saved last night's game with the throw, and Cameron Rupp with a great catch and block of the plate, or absorbing the hit. And they've gotten contributions from guys like that. You know, Goodell, two games now in a row, Friday and Saturday, contributed. So at least the Phillies are interesting. We're talking about them in mid-May, and we're not bemoaning their plight. So I have positive things, and like I said, I'm enjoying the ride. So let's hope they keep this up at least for till midsummer. You know, if they fade, they fade. But I think we're happy with what we're seeing from them. All right, Ron, let's shift topics. It's a big Tuesday. And I'm going to let you. I'm going to give you the three Tuesday topics, and I'll let you. You can pick which one we want to go to first. Tuesday, Eagles OTA starts. Sam Bradford will be there. It looks like Fletcher Cox will not. Tuesday is the Sixers in the draft lottery, where they have a 26.9% chance of getting the first pick. And the Flyers, Claude Giroux and Shane Gostisbehere are going to have hip and lower abdominal surgeries. Your choice. Which topic you want to go to first?
I guess I'll take Flyers for 100, Alex.
There we go. Flyers, Ron, these are not, they both both surgeries, you know, as Ron Hextall said, it's not quite elective, but it's also, you know, not real bad and expects both guys back. I do have a question for you, though. There's a chance both guys could be selected for the international hockey tournament there in September. Should they play in those toys? Both Giroux and Gostisbehere could be on those teams. If so, should they play?
Well, if I'm understanding, I think that tournament happens in August. But I guess there's a lot of prep and training camps and so forth that might start as early as, you know, early July when the free agent period starts in the league. It's an interesting question, Eric. I guess you just have to see how quick the recovery period is for these surgeries. I don't know, no real issue with it. I don't think the intensity of the games or the practices is that high. You know, I think guys kind of have to round themselves into game form anyway, and a couple extra weeks I don't think is going to hurt those players. I'm almost amazed that Mark Streit didn't have off-season surgery. He was not moving around well at all, and I really was suspecting that he was injured with a leg or groin type injury or abdominal injury himself. So to me, that was the one that was the surprise. I was trying to pick out guys who looked like they were playing hurt down the stretch. And I was wrong. I mean, I might have said that Giroux didn't look quite himself in the playoffs and would have been correct there. Gostisbehere, I'm kind of caught off guard on. He did not look like he was struggling very, very much. I mean, it was not quite as electrifying as he was in the early to middle part of the season down the stretch. But it's an interesting thing to me in NHL. You always know that you get to this time of year and you start finding out who was playing hurt. And, you know, this year it turns out to be arguably the team's, if not dynamic, players. So, you know, hopefully certainly for recovery to them is necessary for the team to succeed again next year.
Yeah, although he does not need surgery, Voracek also was, Hextall mentioned, was hurting still from his foot. So hopefully offseason will get him. Ron, we haven't had you on since the Flyers were eliminated by the Capitals. So just, and I've been through this a couple times, but we haven't gotten your opinion on this, your perspective. What do you think their priorities are or should be for the offseason?
Well, they don't really have a whole lot of room to do things in terms of free agents, though, and I don't think that's within the realm of what Ron Hextall is after. I will say that Ryan White played a very important role as the year went along. And honestly, offhand, I don't remember if he was just signed a one-year deal or not, but if his contract's up, that would be someone that they might have to offer a raise to keep around. Beyond that, it's a question of progression.
He's unrestricted.
He's
an unrestricted free agent, and so is...
Would love to have him back, but, you know, I guess they might have to find someone else to fill his role. You can't throw a ton of money at him or a ton of years. But he ended up being the guy who would pay the price in front of that in the second power play unit and was a pretty important player down the stretch for this team, particularly in Sean Couturier's absence. But even without that, I think that he adds something. He adds some toughness and down the line at even strength, whether he's playing third or fourth line, usually fourth. He brings a lot of different things to the table that really no one else on the team brings. And most Wayne Simmonds brings that, but you can't have just one guy like that. So, you know, while White doesn't necessarily fill the net the same way, he does those dirty work kinds of things that they just don't have enough. So, you know, if you want me to go more broadly, you know, it'd be nice to see guys who have toughness and skill all wrapped up in one on this team. And I'm just not quite seeing it. I'd love to see them pass the puck better. I'd like to see them move the puck up ice because they don't necessarily have foot speed. Unlike teams that are succeeding in the playoffs this year, like the Penguins and Lightning, but you can make up for foot speed with precision. If you pass the puck precisely, the speed builds, and teams have to back off. And this Flyers team just really has rarely been one that can skillfully get the puck up ice and move it quickly. And you know, that's where I think that the younger defensemen in the system are the ones that are going to be bringing that game when they get here. But I'm starting to get concerned that the forwards may not be able to match the tempo of the defensemen that we're going to see up here ultimately. So, yeah, I think it's time to take a second look at where some of the forwards fit, where the Matt Reeds of the world fit, for example. You know, I'm happy with the way Braden Schenn and Sean Couturier stepped up their game this year. But I still think that those two played the game best along the wall as well. I'd like to see guys be able to play a little bit more in the middle of the ice other than Giroux and Voracek. And I've yet to feel confident that this team can develop more guys that can be playmakers in the high-scoring type zones on the ice. So, more of my two cents.
I think they do need some skill in that, you know, on the wing. And that's, you know, even the second to third line, you know, obviously fourth line too, but you get what you can there. But, you know, they need some guys who put the puck in the net a little more frequently from those spots. You know, Sam Gagner played well at the end of the year, but, you know, his contract's up. I don't think they're going to re-sign him unless he's going to take a nice pay cut. They're not going to pay him $3.2 million again. And Matt Reed, if you could move him somehow, I would. Mark Streit with 1 year. Do you think they can move Mark Streit? He has 1 year. It's $5.25 million. But he only has 1 year left. Do you think they could get a contender to take him, which does two things. It opens up cap room, and it, you know, obviously opens up the spot for a young defenseman to make this roster. Do you think there's a market out there for him? Not to get a lot back for him, but just somebody would be interested in a guy like Mark Streit?
I didn't like what I saw of him as the season wore on late in the season, and that's why I thought it was a physical thing. And if he wasn't injured, that means that he's definitely wearing down. The age is catching up with him, and then nobody would be interested at that price. So I'd like to see a little more jump from him. You know, he wasn't really the Mark Streit we'd seen last few years. So I guess my quick answer is no, although it's worth a try. You know, had they not had as much success this year as they turned out they had, I was figuring he'd be a guy they'd move this year at the trade deadline, but obviously you couldn't do that. Between some of the injuries that they had, they lost Delzato. They had some other injuries on defense. You know, they obviously were trying to make a playoff push and couldn't move him. I don't know if that's something that could happen in the offseason. It could happen as the season goes on. They might find themselves a little bit flush with defensemen. If a guy like Provorov pushes and makes the team, it could be that Streit, there's a question of playing time, ice time for him. And then maybe they're more likely to want to make a move like that. But I can't be sure. I don't really know what Ron Hextall's thinking there. Sometimes you can't have enough defensemen. you almost need 8 or 9 because you know a couple are going to get hurt. It would be nice to not have the cap hit, but I don't exactly know what they would do with that money. And my gut tells me they're not going to move it before the season. So if they move it in season, then your options for what to do with the money are even more limited. So I have to guess, I think he'll be back. He'll play a significant chunk of the season. He might find himself a healthy scratch here or there, or they may rest him more to keep him fresh. Not unlike diminishing Kimo Timonen's ice time as his career wound down. That may be how they handle him. I have a hard time seeing them actually moving on from him.
Yeah, he was not good in his own end. You're right, in the playoffs for sure. He may have been their worst defenseman in his own end. Let's just switch to Eagles starting OTAs on Tuesday. Sam Bradford's back. Fletcher Cox is not. And like I said, we don't expect him until it's not voluntary anymore. And then, of course, every voluntary thing Fletcher Cox is not going to be at. Ron, why was one a bigger deal than the other? Why was the Sam Bradford thing such a big deal and Fletcher Cox holdout is not? Or I can't call it a holdout because it's voluntary, but his absence is not considered such a big deal?
It's a good question. I mean, maybe it's simply that people feel like the quarterback's the most important position on the team, and some concept that Bradford feels double-crossed because the team traded up twice to be able to draft Carson Wentz, even though we know Bradford's going to get to play this year and Wentz is more being developed. But it's hard to say. Maybe it's just a media thing, too. It's like you have an unhappy guy, and he's a high-profile guy, and you have the option to not re-sign him, and you go ahead and re-sign him, and it may just be the media stirring it up as a soap opera, and Fletcher Cox just isn't really a sexy story the way Sam Bradford is. He was going to be here anyway. He has nowhere to go. Bradford specifically chose to take some money to be here, a lot of money, and now seems to be pouting that, maybe I'm not the long-term solution. Well, guess what, Sam? If you play a little better and throw a few more accurate balls, maybe you can still be a long-term solution here. It's up to his performance how long he's going to play here, in my view. So, I don't think he has much right to pout about it, to be honest with you, Eric. I'd like to see him play better instead.
Yeah. Although I think his agent's right in the sense that, unless – one of two things happens, unless he leads them like almost to the Super Bowl, or if Carson Wentz somehow doesn't develop very well. I mean, I don't think there's any way that Carson Wentz isn't the starting quarterback in 2017, so I don't think Bradford will be here. I think contract plays into it, too. I mean, Sam Bradford's got $22 million guaranteed on a two-year deal, and Fletcher Cox, has not gotten a new contract yet. I think that also plays into, I guess, perception from fans, in terms of like and dislike. But Bradford does have to answer questions to the media. He made a statement last week through his agent, through ESPN. But we'll see what he says when he's actually questioned by the media, how he handles it. Tuesday also, the third, so we've done the Flyers. The surgery is on Tuesday, surgery Tuesday. The Eagles, big day Tuesday. And like I said, Bradford has to talk this week. I think he might be tomorrow where he talks, too. It's either tomorrow or Tuesday, so that'll be of interest. The Sixers have the draft lottery Wednesday night. And, Ron, they have the potential,
Eric,
to get the first
in there on Wednesday because I didn't get a chance to weigh in before, and I might say something off-putting, but do you believe in him? I mean, it's like he's from a small school. Okay, quarterbacks have succeeded. Many players have succeeded from small schools. They didn't even play all that many games in his career. I think it was 38 was the head count of total games in his career, if I have it correct.
23,
even less than that. And
yeah.
I mean, I'm going to throw out a name, Mike Mamula. It just feels like Mike Mamula. It's like, oh, he had a great combine. He has a great arm. He's got a great physique. It looks like he just looks like he's going to be a good player. How do we know he's going to be a good player? 23 games, was at North Dakota State, and he's anointed the number 2 pick in the draft. Was it that week of draft?
Oh, I mean, we hope not. We hope it's not Mike Mamula. But they're pretty convinced if they traded up to get him, and like you said, trade up twice actually to get to that spot. Am I convinced? I mean, I'm a little more convinced than you are, I think, what I hear you saying. But no, I'm not convinced. pass it. I mean, he's willing to throw in the trash.
I'm not saying that I think he will fail. I'm just trying to reinforce that this is a huge leap of faith. And I don't know if I've heard enough out there that people are thinking like me. You know, people are like, well, he must be a stud. They pick a number two. Look at him. He looks great. I mean, were more people as concerned as me, I guess, is my question back to you.
Well, I guess, Ron, I forget what Josh said, but Gordon and I were both thought they gave up too much to get to that spot for him. You know, we both thought they gave up too much to get there to take, like you said, a guy who has made 23 starts. He almost, and that's part of the pressure.
I don't want to interrupt after I ask the question, Eric, but isn't it fair to say they gave up a heck of a lot less than they would have had to give up to get Marcus Mariota last year? And for good reason, because he's not Marcus Mariota. I'll throw that on the fire while you answer the question.
He's not Marcus Mariota. You're right. But for what they gave up, he almost has to be an all-pro quarterback to even justify at all how much they gave up. I mean, they have a lot of needs on this team, and they didn't have a pick till the third round because of this, and they're giving up their one next year and their two the year after that. I mean, that's a lot to give up. So there are questions, right? Yeah, I mean, on this show, there have been questions. Now, we did have a caller, Bill. Bill thought that he's going to be the starter from day one next year. I'm not convinced about that, but I'm more convinced. I'll tell you what, since they picked him, I'm more convinced than I was before. So, yeah, there are questions about him and whether he's worth what they gave up. And I wrote a column last week. Basically, I think the only three people in town who actually understood Sam Bradford's position at all did a comment on it publicly were Mike Silski, me, and Mike Missanelli. I don't know if I want to be in that company with the two Mikes. You can decide which one I want to be in company with and which one
not.
No,
that's very unusual company for you to be in, Eric, because you're far less outspoken than the other two.
Yeah, it's sort of a contrarian position, but I understood where they're coming from when Bradford, in the sense that they didn't move up there to have him sit, and Mike had a Mike Silski had a stat, something like, of the top guys picked in the top three, nine of them have started before their first year was half over. And of the 25 quarterbacks, so this is in the last 10 years, the 25 quarterbacks drafted in the last 10 years, 15 of them started from day one. And I think that I forget the number now, also started before their rookie season was over. I mean, when you look at stuff like that,
I could probably point out that, Jameis Winston played less or just about the same number of college games as Carson Wentz, sorry. But, obviously a more high-profile situation. So I guess it's not beyond the realm of possibility that 20 games in the NCAA gives you a shot at playing as a starter in the NFL. I mean, Winston did it last year, so it is the new trend.
The over-under for his starts from Vegas is 3.5, just to throw that out there. Josh, that's an honor. Josh, who likes to give us the Vegas lines. Ron, last quick thing, and then I guess we'll have to do final thoughts on the other side. Sixers draft lottery Tuesday night. Like I said, the worst-case scenario is, and I wrote about this on phillyfanatics.com, worst-case scenario, they get the fourth pick and nothing else up high. Best-case scenario, they could get 1-4. And there's a whole bunch of other things in between. Sam Hinkie, they might owe him a debt of gratitude. They can flip picks with the Kings, which is why they're 26.9 instead of 25. But my question for you, Ron, really is how much difference does it make for the Sixers in terms of what they're going to do? How much better they're going to be? Does it make much difference to get two young guys like this?
God, I'm almost going to answer the question like Sam Hinkie's still here because it's, he might as well keep having shots at this thing, right? I mean, the more players with pedigree you can put on the roster, in theory, you should be improving. I think the problem is it was just never chemistry, never found a point guard that they like. You can collect all the big men in the world, and if you can't get the ball to them or you can't shoot from the outside, then what's the difference? So, I have not had a whole lot of faith in how the Sixers have gone about it, so I'm the wrong person to ask, but if you're asking whether it makes a whole lot of difference because we think they'll fail anyway, I think as a fan you have to be optimistic that they're going to finally hit on the right guy or right combination of guys if they keep picking up near the top. But there's no guarantee. I think of in the NBA, it really only takes us one or two guys, too. Like the Edmonton Oilers in the NHL have been picking at the top forever, and it seems to not help them. But, you know, back in the day, the Quebec Nordiques becoming the Colorado Avalanche, picking near the top a bunch of years in a row, certainly did help them. They won multiple cups. So it really depends. It comes back
to thank you to our live listeners, and we'll be check out PhillyKnox.com. We'll talk to you next week at a special time. And now let's go into archive. I'm sorry, Ron. Go ahead. I didn't interrupt you.
I didn't keep my eye on 7 o'clock. My apologies, Eric. A little out of practice here. But, yeah, I think it comes back to, is the front office going to make the right picks? Because, another team, Washington Nationals, became a very good team after being a lousy team, picking up near the top of the draft. And even in baseball, it's not even nearly as much of a given. I think football and basketball are actually the sports where picking up near the top helps you the most, typically. And in basketball, even more so, because you only put 5 guys on the floor. So you have one gigantic impact guy. You've seen the teams can have 30, 40 game swings by adding that one guy. So we can only hope.
Yeah.
Do I have faith in general? Probably not. If I had to guess, it might move the needle a bit. But, that moves the needle probably to maybe barely close to a 500 team, not a championship caliber team, just for one selection.
Oh, yeah, I'm going 500. I'm not going championship. I mean, I'm looking at, like you said, the more picks I have at the top, the better. Their other picks are going to be 24th and 26th. I don't know how much to expect there. But, if you get a 1-4 or a 1-5 or 2-5, at least you have a shot. And, but, like you said, there's a greater chance. Like I said, it'll be ironic if that Kings pick that the Hinkie's gotten the Nick Stauskas deal, the opportunity to switch picks, if that pays off for the Sixers, we might have to owe Sam Hinkie a debt of gratitude there. But Ron, you pointed out the biggest thing, because I was talking about
squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, Eric.
Yeah, the other day I was talking to somebody, and he's talking about like free agents coming here, like Kevin Durant, and I'm like, why would he come here? And he's like, they're building. I said, the Sixers don't have a guard, not one guard, who's half as good as the guards that are basically still in the playoffs. I mean, they don't have anybody half as good as that. And don't give me Ish Smith. Really, there's nobody here at guard right now who can, like you said, get the ball to the people in the right position for a winning team. You can make some plays and exciting plays, but not a guy who can really run the point. And they really don't have a two-guard who can shoot very well either, unless you're talking about, someone like Isaiah Cannon or Ish Smith himself, where it's more like, they're going to fire up a ton of shots. It's not really in the, within the, a set offense. I mean, they're just firing up shots and you hope they get hot. That's not a good two guard. Until they fix that I don't know if there's really good guard. Ben Simmons can't really shoot from the outside. I don't know. We'll see. But I do have one negative thing, of course, being the Sixers, and I'm sorry for this, but it is Negadelphia. Brian Colangelo had the number one pick when he was with the Raptors, and he picked Andrea Bargnani in 2006 as the number one pick, passing over LaMarcus Aldridge, who went number two. And later in that draft, Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard, and even Nick Vucevic, who the Sixers took 16th, was a better choice there than Bargnani. And then he compounded that by signing into a long-term contract. But his first contract was up 5 years, $50 million, $10 million a year. Brian Colangelo better than Sam Hinkie? Probably, but I don't have complete faith in him yet either. Which leads us up to our final thoughts. Ron, your final thought.
I'll go to hockey, and I'll go to the two teams in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Tampa Bay Lightning, both of whom were hovering below the playoff line probably about mid-season before they kicked it in the gear, and the Penguins, even with a coaching change. It just kind of goes to show you how fickle the NHL is and really how it just seems to be about teams coming together. Certainly you need talent, but it does seem like in this league, with a cap and with the teams very closely matched, that any kind of edge that can push a team to overachieve, even just by a little bit relative to their peers, can push a team far. So something to look at when you look at Pittsburgh and Tampa, and they also have the speed factor that I'd like to see the Flyers continue to emphasize. I think they're still behind the curve when it comes to that. So even though there's optimism that the Flyers are on an improvement trend and arguably the team closest to being exciting out of the four major teams in the city, and also broke the playoff drought that was almost going to be two straight years, four teams shut out. I have to give them some credit, but look to how other teams are building and the small kinds of changes that can be made in season that pay off big.
Yep, and you don't want to put too much on the guy, but I'm hoping that Konechny gets up here next year. He'd be, if they could make room for him somewhere, he'd be the kind of guy who has a little more of what you're talking about. Again, as a rookie, I wouldn't expect too much from him, but at least he has the type of speed and skill you're talking about. Now, he's pretty small, but hopefully that'll work out. So I'm going to, Ron, you also give me a nice transition to what I'm going to talk about, which is just, and I didn't think about that Flyers breaking the playoff list streak there, or continuing a playoff drought if they hadn't made it for the city. But Sixers, I've been really negative on the Sixers, and I have been for a number of years, and I completely did not buy into the process at all and didn't trust Sam Hinkie from day one. I don't trust the ownership of this team and the management of this team. Having said that, boy, if they get a nice combination in the draft lottery, a 1 and a 5, a 1 and a 4 would be optimal, two high picks, I might get a little excited about this team and at least what the possibilities are. You know, the team still, like you said, doesn't have chemistry. It's not constructed well. But, boy, if you get 2 picks in the top 6, you should come out with 2 guys who can play and be good starters in this league and actually not have to sit on the bench. It depends on how old they are. If they come right out of college 1 year, sometimes they need a little more seasoning. But we've had enough of those guys. At least it gives me some reason to be hopeful for the Sixers, at least some reason to get excited about them. Again, not that I think they're going to be a playoff contender or anything like that, but at least maybe they can join the Phillies in being a bad team on the upswing instead of a bad team playing for the lottery every year. Maybe 1 year coming up soon, we won't see the Sixers near the top of the lottery percentages like they've been the last 3 years. That's it for this week's show. Thank you, Ron Over. Ron, great to have you back. Thank you.
Great to be back, Eric. And your last, your final thought, as it, I'll encapsulate it, as you're saying South Philly might become a no laughing stock zone soon. Is that what I'm hearing?
We can only hope. I don't know if it'll happen, but at least there's reason for some optimism. Like I said, we'll see Tuesday night. Although somehow if they end up with just the 4th pick, or then I'll. Some of that optimism will go away from me because they need multiple players to make this team better. And I'm not sold that they're going to get free agents or their new practice facility is all of a sudden going to get premier free agents coming to them. So, yeah, you're right. I'm being optimistic. I'm thinking I'm rooting good ping pong balls on Tuesday or good lottery, whatever it is. So that's it. So anyway, Ron, great to have you back. Thank you for being here. Thank you those of you who listened or listening to this in archive. Check out PhillyFanatics.com. We will be at a special time next week. We will not be at our usual 6:30 time on Sunday. So check out PhillyFanatics.com for an update on what time that show will be. For Ron Ofer, I am Eric Fisher. Thank you for listening. Have a great week, everybody.